is Labor Day, and you're listening to the Hancock and Kelly Show, sitting in for Chris and Amy. No worries, they will be back here tomorrow and take you through the rest of the week. A short
or
week.
As my granddaughter would say, they will be here tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yes.
Goodness gracious, she's so cute.
Yes.
Hey, these are fun weeks, right? When you go to work and, you know, you got a day off here. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Only a four-day work week.
I know. Not for us, of course. It's a five-day work week because here we are working.
Wait, what's this deal? Have you been reading some of this stuff online about President Trump? Speaking of President Trump, he's got some tariffs.
Well, indeed. The tariffs have been a centerpiece of this administration from day one. He did impose some tariffs during his first term, most of them for national security reasons. And joining us to talk about the whole issue of tariffs and where we stand right now legally with them is Michelle Scholz. She's an international trade attorney. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us on this Labor Day, and I hope you're having a good day.
Thank you for having me. I am.
Good. Let's start with the basics. There is a conception that many have that tariffs are paid for by foreign governments or foreign companies. That's not the case.
Right. That is not the case. The customs regulations in the United States, which are found under Title 19, I'm sure you don't want to go look that up right now, but require that the importer has to pay the duties. And the importer of record in the U.S. is the party that's responsible for duties. So if duties aren't paid, customs is coming after the importer, not the foreign party.
And these are American companies, for the most part, that are importing goods into the United States. And in the pricing of goods that are sold in the United States, one of the first components of pricing that is the cost of the good. And now the cost of that good has been enhanced by anywhere from 10 to 50% based on the country, based on the tariff rate that has been imposed. And so those end up being paid all or in part by American consumers.
Yes, exactly. In the beginning, some distributors or retailers were able to take that cost on and try to not share the entire cost with the customers, but it's becoming less and less sustainable. And what we're seeing is that our clients, importers, are passing costs along to their clients. And in some cases, the importers are really struggling.
Another conception that's out there, and I want to get to the legal situation, and I'm really glad you're an attorney, but there's this other perception that other countries have been ripping us off for many years by imposing tariffs that we don't reciprocate. To what extent is that a legitimate concern?
It has its point. I mean, it makes sense. But we've had trade deficits for 49 years, so it's not anything new. And I think that's what people don't realize. We didn't suddenly get this emergency. We've had tariffs imposed on us forever. And so now we're coming back and imposing tariffs on these other countries, and they're replying by imposing more tariffs on us. It's really become a big trade war.
It has, and most of the tariff relationships that existed are the basis of a negotiated trade agreement between the United States and country X. There may be multiple multilateral relationships like the North American Free Trade Agreement, certainly GATT, the General Agreement on Trades and Tariffs. It was more of a global agreement, but most of the structure that had existed has been built upon agreements that the United States has willingly entered into.
Yes, that's correct. We've had multilateral agreements, bilateral agreements. It was under the first Trump term that the NAFTA was updated to be the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Free Trade Agreement. And all of these were entered into willingly.
And so here we sit. Longstanding, at least in modern American history, tariffs have been a diplomatic tool. They've been a national security tool that have been used. And that's certainly, I think if you look at the first Trump administration, certainly the tariffs imposed on China because of their unfair trade practices and currency manipulation. There was, you can argue, a very legitimate reason to have done what President Trump did in his first term. But this term, those tariffs are sweeping, nearly global in their effect on nearly every country, not Russia, but nearly every country. And so now you have this court case, and it was decided at the lower court level that the president does not have the authority that he is claiming to be able to impose these widespread tariffs. And then last week, an appeals court on a 7-4 decision ruled that the vast majority of the tariffs that have been imposed are unconstitutional. Explain the legal reasoning for those rulings. Let's start there.
Okay, great. So the vast majority of the tariffs that are currently being imposed or even contemplated were presented through an executive order. And the reason that the presidency could create an executive order rather than going through Congress, which is the normal process, is that the current administration is relying on a specific statute. It's called the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, and we just call that IEEPA. This is an act that was established during Cold War times and used for purposes of wartime for an emergency to allow the president to address emergencies. It doesn't specifically call out tariffs as an avenue to do that. So this new court decision affirms the Court of International Trade's decision several months ago, saying that's not what this statute was intended for. It doesn't mention tariffs, and it certainly doesn't mention unlimited tariffs. Right now, we have no limits on how long this will go on. So it's now been decided that these tariffs are not legal, and the argument will continue because the U.S. government plans to appeal that.
And they would appeal, of course, to the United States Supreme Court. I find this the most interesting aspect of all of this. Our guest, Michelle Schulz, she's an international trade attorney. I find this the most interesting aspect of it, because if you look at this court, there's a couple of potentially conflicting threads in this court. On the one hand, the court has demonstrated that it has an expansionist view of executive power. I think about the executive immunity case they decided a couple of years ago. And so there is a sympathy on a majority of the court for executive power. And I don't sense that this court is going to wade in as to whether or not this constitutes an emergency. They will, I think, defer to the president to be able to determine what an emergency is. On the other hand, as you point out, this law, the IEEPA law, never mentions tariffs specifically. The word tariff does not appear in the law that the administration is citing for imposing the tariffs. And the court also has a pretty strict constructionist, originalist makeup, who might look at this statute and might look at the Constitution, which explicitly gives the power of tariff to the Congress. But I think it's an open question as to which one of those approaches this court's going to take. How do you see it?
I think you're right. I think this could go either way. The trade lawyers like myself, we stick pretty closely to the language of the law. But there are interpretations that can happen here, and I know that the court's divided. So they may decide they want the executive branch to have this power, although it was originally with Congress. I think there are a couple of judges that could go either way, maybe Amy Coney Barrett. I think we know where Thomas will fall, but we don't actually know where everyone will end up on this, because it's a question of how to interpret this law and the scope of this law.
And if now we're going to hypothetical, you may not like these hypotheticals, but I'm going to do it anyway. Let's say the court upholds the appellate court ruling and says that these tariffs are unconstitutional, that they have to be levied by Congress. Do we revert back at that point to the previously agreed to trade agreements, or are we basically starting from scratch at that point?
That's going to be an interesting scenario. If that should happen, first of all, there are some tariffs that aren't impacted by this decision, and those are the ones that are aimed at national security or unfair trade practices. We had some tariffs that were in place under different regulations and statutes, Section 301 and 232. So those are different. But for these, the reciprocal tariffs and the fentanyl tariffs, the ones that are supposedly an emergency, I believe there will be an opportunity for importers who've been paying these tariffs to claim a refund. And that will be a process.
Wow, you're not kidding. And the court's term begins. I guess the tariffs under the appellate court are set to expire sometime in October. So they're with us for at least another month plus. The Supreme Court, who knows if they take the case? And if they do take the case, who knows what the oral argument schedule is going to be? I mean, you could be looking at potentially months and months before this thing is finally settled. Before we let you go, Michelle Schultz is our guest, international trade attorney. The issue of balance of trade deficits has been in the news, and the president has cited our trade deficits with most of the world as a rationale for imposing these tariffs. And you mentioned earlier that we've had a trade deficit in this country for almost a half a century. And, you know, as I explain to people, I have a trade deficit with my barber because, you know, they cut my hair and I pay them money and my barber has never bought a thing from me. But that relationship is of value to me because I need to get my hair cut, even though I don't have much left anymore. And so the trade deficit as an argument is not something that most economists see as a real issue in the first place, correct?
Correct. Because a lot of the goods that we're importing are being used to make products that we sell and possibly subsequently export. So this deficit can be misperceived because it's the fact that we are buying foreign products and that we need those foreign products that's creating the deficit in part. In some cases, we didn't have a deficit with the country that was assigned the new tariff.
Brazil.
Yes, exactly. Yes. We did not have a deficit. We had a surplus. But for political reasons, there was a duty assigned. So sometimes the deficit argument doesn't quite fit.
She is Michelle Schultz, an international trade attorney, kind enough to join us here on KMOX. Have a great Labor Day. What more pertinent conversation could we be having? And then, John, about what keeps our economy going on Labor Day. Hey, when Hancock and Kelly come back, they're building bike lanes everywhere, but where are all the bikers? That's my question. After this on KMOX.
The Chris and Amy Show, weekdays starting at 9 on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
All right, John.
Yeah, buddy.
I'm pro-bicycle. I think it's great that people get out and ride their bikes. I went and watched a bicycle race yesterday.
Just yesterday, you're watching speed around the track at 32 miles an hour.
Yes, but I have strong feelings about this whole bicycling culture that we're living in right now.
All right.
Okay. First of all, I see the bikers in the park. Love them. There's a trail specifically for bike riders Forest Park. These guys can whip around.
They're whirling around
the
park.
They can walk around quicker than I can run a mile. They can do the 6 or 7 miles on their bike.
They're on wheels.
Yeah, they're on wheels. So they come running by. I have no problem with them, okay?
All right.
But bikers, we are bending over backwards for these people.
Bending over backwards for bikers and bike lanes.
Downtown St. Louis all the way to Forest Park. It's really cool. They got these bikeways that they're building, protected areas so that the bikers can ride their bikes and not have to deal with the cars. Well, good decision. All for it.
They're narrow. I don't know how you keep that bike in that little narrow. Well, if you look at those things, you know, I'm thinking if I'm driving this bike, I'm going to be,
right.
weaving around out there. But no, these people are, they stick right in the straight and narrow.
So we got them on these bike planes. And first of all, I never see anybody on the bike paths that we've made and all these protected lanes in downtown St. Louis that have screwed up parking, etc. I never see anybody actually riding the bikes out there.
I do.
I rarely see them, but I'm glad that we have them.
Good.
But here's my real problem with bikers.
Okay, here we go.
None of us understand the rules of the road as it relates to a biker. These bikers, we've built you protected lanes, but no. You're in the street that I'm in, driving in front of me when I'm in an automobile, throwing your hand left and right and making left-hand turns.
Making the turn signals. But
they come up to a stop sign right in the middle of the lane. Have you encountered this?
You got the how sign like an Indian as a right-hand turn?
Yeah. Have you encountered this where these people think they're like a car, even though they're on?
Let me tell you what happened to me.
A bike?
Let me tell you what happened to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Minding my own business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have my little circuit.
Whistling along, were you?
My little circuit that I run. I go pull out of the house. I got to go to the post office
bank.
See if anybody's paid me.
Right.
Then you got the bank in case somebody did pay me. You know, it happens a couple times.
Sonic?
Well, that's the other direction.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. And then I take off to Schnucks. And so the road is called Woods Mill. It's not 141.
It's a pretty busy road.
It's a busy road. Not 141, which used to be Woods Mill.
No, this
is the actual Woods Mill.
Okay.
That runs parallel to 141.
Know where you're at.
So coming up on Woods Mill and Clayton, which is a very busy intersection.
True that.
On my way to Schnucks.
Mm-hmm. Friendly store in town.
And, of course, there's a red light there.
Yep.
And so I begin to slow down, and I look in front of me, and in the middle of the middle lane.
Yes.
In the middle of the middle lane.
Go ahead.
Is a bicycle.
Yep.
A bicycle upon which sits two small children.
Whoa.
And they're probably... father. So the father is driving the bicycle in the middle lane, in the middle of the middle lane, at a red light at the corner of Clayton and Woods Mill with two kids on the back, stopped.
What were they like, sitting side by side?
No,
like
they were back. It was like a three, you know, like a...
Okay.
Know, like a... Yeah.
Did they have helmets on?
They did.
Okay, good to know that the parent was conscious enough
they're
for that.
They're all wearing helmets, and they're sitting there, and so I'm thinking to myself, how is this going to work?
Right.
That's a bicycle.
Yeah.
He's at a standstill stop in the middle of the middle lane
with two babies.
Woods Mill with two little small children.
Toddlers.
So anxiously I await for the light to change from red to green. Takes forever, as you know.
Yeah.
Cars going down Clayton Road, turning left.
Right.
And you watch, and I'm second one in line, so I'm going to be there a while.
Yeah, you're going to make it, though.
Supposedly.
Uh-huh.
So finally, at long last, the light turns green, at which point Daddy starts pedaling the bicycle.
Right.
He's going maybe a half a mile an hour.
Sure, just barely keeping it up.
Across Clayton Road.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm there, I'm thinking, this is never going to end.
Get on the side of the road.
It's unbelievable. Does he move to the right?
No.
Does he stay in the center of the lane?
Yes.
And so there I am, and I don't want to get too close. There's kids.
Because there's kids.
And I'm not.
You don't honk and scare the kids.
I may not be the most skilled driver
that ever
lived. And so, that got me to thinking.
Why aren't there more rules for bikers?
How can that possibly be a thing?
Hello.
That I'm driving a bike in the middle of the middle lane, going across a busy intersection with two kids, doing 1 mile an hour. That can't be right, can it?
No, it isn't right. But nobody knows the rules. Why is he in the middle road? Let's say he doesn't have the kids. It's still annoying that you're at a three lane, one going left, one going right, one going straight, and he's in the middle one like he's a car.
So if he's if he's our friend Jason, from the bike race, and he's on one of those, nice little
fine
thing, he could probably get
going
up to 30 miles an hour right there on Woods
Mill.
But this guy wasn't going to go 30 miles an hour with his two kids. And it was a bike. Like the old pea picker bike I used to have when I was a kid.
Pea picker?
I had the pea picker.
That sounds old.
Oh, This thing.
Is that what you used to deliver your newspapers with?
I didn't have newspapers, but I did ride the pea picker around right
they
there.
They had a big old banana seat on it?
But I never took the pea picker on Frost Avenue, I'll tell you that.
Pea picker. I had a mongoose. Does that sound like a bike's
name?
Same
principle, I'm okay. sure. Okay. Did you have a little basket on the front?
No. Well, did you have a bell? Cha-ching, cha-ching?
I had a basket and a bell because it was my sister's bike. And so,
brother.
But I ripped the basket off of there.
But you had a brother.
You got to be a man. Yeah. But
see, there's a reason that I only had girl stuff growing up, because right. I had five sisters, no brothers.
Yeah, but the pea picker.
But you were riding a pea picker?
But I wouldn't dream of taking that pea picker out on Woods Mill and going to Schnucks to drive in 1 mile an hour across the interstate. I just wouldn't dream of it.
I just think that we should have some type of like mass education of what the rules of the road are for bikers so that we all know, because I don't understand their own rules. And they should only be in these protected bike lanes that we've built from them that I see none of them riding in.
I'm just reading the text line here.
What are they saying?
Somebody feels that I have an obsession with Sweet Baby Ray's.
Oh, the barbecue sauce?
They said there's so much better out there. Robert, if you're still listening, do tell, because I've got time to make a change there.
The Sweet Baby's Ray's?
I love the Sweet Baby Ray's. But
all barbecue sauces kind of taste the same?
Oh, buddy.
I mean, when you go to the grocery store and there's 50 kinds of barbecue sauce there,
yes, there's a
reason
for it.
You only get Sweet Baby's Ray's.
That's what I get.
What about all this other tastefulness you're missing out on?
Well, life is about choices, Mike.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to the same thing.
Well, unless Robert elucidates for me here on the text line.
Like, you can go by Pappy's and pick up their barbecue sauce and take it home and put that on your roasted shoe leather night.
I could, but I'm going to choose not to. But you know what's happening?
What?
You know what yesterday was?
The last day of August.
It was the last Sunday before the start of the National Football League season. Oh,
isn't that awesome?
And now we are cresting into a new NFL season, and that means
the NFL
it is
insider.
Time for our regular visit with our NFL insider. He's going to tell us all about what's about to unfold before us in the National Football League. That is next on Camel X.
As the warm breezes of summer slowly give way to autumn leaves and winter chills, it's go time in the National Football League. After a postseason of drafts and trades and eternal hopes, the gladiators of the gridiron take center stage for another season of dramatic plays, decisive displays, and aerial arrays. 32 teams are tied for first place in the intense race for immortality in the National Football League. And joining us to kick off the NFL season of 2025-26 is our NFL insider from Chicago, Illinois, John Hancock. John, how are you?
How about that intro? I'm doing well. Hope the same to you.
Well, we're all excited. Thursday night kicks off the opening game. It's the Eagles against the Cowboys, a couple of teams, arguably, that are in the race for the NFC Championship game. How do you see that one playing out on Thursday?
Yeah, so I don't know if the Cowboys are really going to be in any discussion except for possibly a top five draft pick after they traded Micah Parsons late last week to the Packers. I like the Philadelphia Eagles to roll. Obviously, last game we all saw, they blew the doors off of the Chiefs. I think they're going to keep this going into this next year. I expect them to win handedly.
Well, that would be a good start for them. They have we have our cross-state team, the Kansas City Chiefs, who also are hoping to find their way back to the Super Bowl. Any prognosis on how you think that Taylor Swift's favorite team might do?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, you know, I hope it works out for Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. I really do. I, you know, as the NFL expert, I give it 3 years max, but I hope I'm wrong on that one. But the Kansas City Chiefs, a lot of people are saying that the AFC West is going to be a tough division this year. They think they make a challenge by the Chargers or the Broncos, but I don't see that. I think the Chiefs take a slight step back, probably down to 12, 13 games. One for them, but I think they handle that division, and we're seeing Mahomes, Andy Reid, and the gang back in the postseason.
Well, we will find out. The Chiefs, you know, they're without Rajay Rice, right, for at least the start of the season, and Travis Kelce's not getting any younger. I'm interested about this 3-year prediction. So Is this not? Have we not all witnessed the true love? That, I mean, here's a woman that probably never saw a football game in her life.
She's the biggest star in the world.
And now she never misses one.
Yeah.
And there she and Trav and Tay-Tay. On what basis, John, do you think this is only going to last 3 years?
Like, I'm the same man who called Cooper DeJean giving an interception in the Super Bowl last year. You could ask me how I saw that. I just call it how I see it. 3 years is, I think what we're dealing with here. For this relationship, we'll see if it gets to the wedding.
I hate to remind you of this, but you also patented the phrase "he's a complete fraud" for one Baker Mayfield, who now finds himself to be one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, and continues to improve year in and year out.
I'm glad you brought that up, Michael. If you actually remember at the start of last season, I said he had lost that title. He had earned some respect, and that title went on to Trevor Lawrence with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
So in three years, you'll eat your words on Taylor and Mr. Kelsey?
We'll see. But back to Baker, let me tell you, this is a guy who used to be, a punk, for lack of a better word, with the FCC regulations I have to deal with. But he got humbled. He was kind of floating out there, got sent to Los Angeles, got sent to Carolina, and he's found a home in Tampa. And I actually think Tampa could be a team that's probably going to win their division, like many people are saying. But I wouldn't be shocked if the Big Show actually shows us something, and we might be looking at Tampa Bay heading back to the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Now, that's bold. I've heard a lot of people say Tampa Bay's going to be impressive this year, but Super Bowl talk is we're gonna write that one down. I am really fascinated by the NFC North. Now the Packers, the aforementioned linebacker that they signed, Micah Parsons, rusher that they signed. The Packers are a real force in that division. The Lions, the defending champions of the NFC North, have lost their offensive and defensive coordinators. And, who knows what the Minnesota Vikings are going to be. That's going to be maybe the most interesting division in football.
It definitely is. You mentioned the Lions losing both coordinators. It's going to be interesting to see how Dan Campbell, the head coach there, is able to keep the train on the tracks. They were dealing with a lot of injuries to their defense last year. They are healthy now, so I don't expect them taking a big step back. But this is going to be a big year for Caleb Williams here in Chicago. Ben Johnson, the Lions offensive coordinator, now head coach of the Bears. And they have a lot of weapons, so it's going to be interesting to see. There's some speculation that Ben Johnson may be trying to turn Caleb Williams into Jared Goff, where you don't need to be special, you don't need to be great, just get the ball where it needs to be on time. And that could be good for the young quarterback.
Yeah, the Bears are a really interesting team. Of course, Chris Ranji, whose show this is, but he's not here, a huge Chicago Bear fan, and that's a team could be potentially on the rise, as you mentioned. I want to go to my favorite team that I root for, and I have for a number of years since the Rams left here, which has been it's been a decade now, is the Buffalo Bills. They've got arguably the best quarterback in football, the reigning MVP in Josh Allen. A very impressive offense there in Buffalo. Is this the year for the Buffalo Bills to take it all?
I hope so. I mean, Josh Allen, this is a guy, he is, it seems like it's heartbreak after heartbreak in the postseason, and it seems to always be against the Chiefs. He is 0-4 against Patrick Mahomes, which is crazy. There was this narrative going out there, that Tom Brady, Peyton Manning couldn't beat Tom Brady in the playoffs. Tom Brady only beat Peyton Manning twice. Josh Allen's lost to Patrick Mahomes four times now. And you almost have to think, if they're seeing Kansas City on the other side of the field, I don't know how you can feel comfortable picking the Bills in that game. They're going to need someone else maybe to knock off Mahomes and the Chiefs before they see him.
We are visiting with John Hancock from Chicago. He's our NFL insider, has been doing it for the Hancock and Kelly Show for several years. John, this is going to be an interesting season this year because I think every team in the NFL is going to be playing some type of international game. What do you think of all this throwing in these games around the world in the midst of an NFL season?
Yeah, so I don't know if it's great for the players, but I think it does spread the game globally, which is good for the league and the bottom lines of the teams. So long as the field conditions are fine, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I know we got the week one game, Kansas City and the Chargers in Sao Paulo, Brazil. We'll see how that one goes. But like I said, as long as the field conditions are fine, I don't have a problem with it. But if, you know, someone gets hurt in a Brazilian field because it's not up to par, people are going to be asking questions.
Well, and it just seems like, you know, the NFL, man, it's a grueling grind. I mean, just getting from Sunday to Sunday and then have to throw in going to Europe or going to South America, it just seems unfair to these guys. You don't see that happening from the other big leagues in the world. The Premier League plays its preseason games in the United States. But when it comes to the real games, nobody's having to sacrifice any home field advantage to go play in around the world. I don't think it's right.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's a fair take. I mean, it can't be great. You're never dealing 100% in the NFL. You're always banged up to some degree, having to fly 6, 7, 8, 9 hours. And speaking of that, the rest is such a key part of this game. And the San Francisco 49ers have a pretty favorable rest schedule this year. So I think that could be good for them as a potential bounce back.
Yeah, because you're obviously worried about Christian McCaffrey, who's oft injured, and when he's healthy, he's special. They've lost Debo Samuel. That leads me to, you know, our NFL insider, Michael, as you know, is known for making bold predictions.
For instance, he said Baker Mayfield's a fraud.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to ask our NFL insider to make a couple of bold predictions. I want you to pick one team that's going to really disappoint this year, in your opinion, and one team that nobody's talking about that might be something special. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, so for one team that no one's really talking about that I think something special could happen, we're heading to the NFC West in the Arizona Cardinals.
Wow.
I think they may be able to surprise somebody. The Niners, if they can't stay healthy, which has been a major concern, you know, that's gonna hamper their ability. And the Rams, Matt Stafford's banged up. He was dealing with some lingering injuries in the preseason. I think that opens the door. Coach Gannon, in his second season, he's a defensive coach. We just need Kyler Murray to step up. And Marvin Harrison Jr., ooh, who had a very disappointing rookie season. Yeah, but if he can be the guy that people thought he was going to be coming out of Ohio State, I think that's a team that could surprise some people.
Now, that is a fascinating choice for a surprise team, because you're right. I've not heard anybody speculating about the Arizona, formerly St. Louis football Cardinals. So that's a good one. On the disappointment side.
Yeah, so I'm gonna stick in the West, but go over to the AFC. The Denver Broncos, made the playoffs last year. There's a lot of hype around Sean Payton and Bo Nix, but I don't see it. They have a great defense. No doubt about it, but Bo Nix, well, I think he's going to take a step back, and that should be a tough division. I could see them going below 500, and I know a lot of people are picking them to make the playoffs, if not even challenging the Chiefs.
I know of the 15 or 18 people listening right now that a number of them may have engaged in fantasy football this season. Give us a couple, three fantasy sleepers that might be still available for some folks because they didn't get picked, who are going to surprise some people and generate some points.
So I like Tyler Warren, tight end, rookie tight end on the Indianapolis Colts. He is poised to have a potential big year, similar to Brock Bowers last year with the Raiders. And then Travion Henderson, rookie running back for the New England Patriots. You know, he's probably not available in your leagues, but I would draft him earlier. I think he is poised to have a breakout with Vrabel at the helm in New England, running the football, establishing that ground game. Travion Henderson and Tyler Warren are my couple of sleepers.
There you go. Patriots, by the way, are they a factor this year?
They could be. They could be. I think it wouldn't shock me if they made the playoffs. It wouldn't shock me if they had 5 wins. So it'll be interesting to see. But they got a wider range.
He is the NFL insider, kind enough to join us here on Camo X. John Hancock, I hope you have a great Labor Day up there in Chicago. Are you barbecuing to celebrate the rest of the day?
No barbecue today. Just enjoying the day off and some good weather here in the Windy City.
Well, you deserve it, and thank you so much for joining us. When Hancock and Kelly come back, we'll send you off to Cardinal baseball in the pregame here. But Hancock and Kelly will wrap up our show and take you to the top of the hour after this on KMOX. It's the Jewish Elvis right there.
Neil Diamond.
He's the greatest.
Poor guy. He's still with us, right? But he's got dementia.
Yeah, it's not going well.
Yeah.
Hey, with our NFL insider, there was a passive reference made to Taylor and
Travis. Travi and Tay-Tay.
And I got to tell you, I'm kind of excited about the Travis and Taylor engagement. I feel like the whole world has watched this relationship blossom in front of their eyes. They seem to be genuinely into each other. It doesn't appear to be fake. I mean, when you have the celebrity that she has, and it's hard to be a normal person, and they seem to be having a normal relationship.
I'll tell you what would just ruin it for me.
Tell me.
You fall in love with Taylor Swift.
Hey, now.
And she's doing well.
Uh-huh.
And now suddenly you realize that it's time to make this permanent.
Right.
It's time to make a commitment.
Get down on one knee.
Last a lifetime.
Right.
And that means that you've got to go pick out a ring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're buying a ring for a woman who is worth
everything.
$2.5-3 billion.
Yep.
If she wants a 50-carat
she can have it.
She can get it.
Right.
Go buy it. And you're living off of a measly $17 million a year. I mean,
I got the remedy for this.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So here I am. I'm only making $17 million. And
right.
She's worth, every time she goes and sings a song, she makes more money than I'm. And then I'm making a year.
Yeah.
Getting my body bloodied and beaten and tattered.
Yeah. So here's what you do.
Okay.
Here's what a real suave man would do.
Right.
He would go to her father and her mother and say, you know what? Taylor has everything, and I want to give her my heart. But to make this engagement special, is there a family ring or heirloom that I could ask her to marry me with?
No.
Maybe your grandparents or another. So then you've taken the pressure off of, I need to buy a ring the size of an elephant for my fiance. And I went and put it on the potential in-laws to give me like an old ring. And not only did I not have to spend money to buy stuff, I look like a really suave, deep-thinking kind of dude.
Here's the problem with that, Kelly.
Well, okay.
Whatever diamonds are laying around from great-grandma Gertrude.
Yeah.
Whatever was out there from Grandma Emma.
Yeah.
She's already taken those.
Yeah.
She's already turned those into earrings or, studs on a dress or those things are gone.
Wow.
Taylor, they're gone.
Not going to happen.
And so now Travis has got to go out there and he's got to drop some money on it. He's got to find a diamond, in the rough, as it were. And, I feel sorry for the guy. But he bought her a ring. She took it. She likes it. And they're getting married. I think here's the wedding.
I have another
Have they talked about the wedding yet?
No.
Here's the wedding. Perfect.
What? Okay.
Halftime show at the Super Bowl.
Mm.
You don't have to worry about getting one of these stupid singers. It's controversial. It's singing stuff that nobody records. Have the wedding.
At the Super Bowl? What if he's playing in the Super Bowl?
Let's bring the Pope,
who is an American.
He's probably a Swiftie. Huh. Let's let the Pope officiate the wedding. That is how this is going to play
out. That may be the ratings of all ratings getter.
If Pope she were Leo, to perform the Travis Super Bowl, Kelce, Taylor Swift on the center stage at halftime at the Super Bowl, the wedding of the century. Mm. There you have it, folks.
Well, he is John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. We've had a great time being with you. We will be back on Friday mornings. What time do we start? About 8:40. You want to get
right
there right away because if you blink, you'll miss us.
Yeah.
You can see us on Sundays on Fox 2 at 8:30, but we're going to take this Sunday off. In fact, we're just going to go away for a while.
Hey, it's the Gas House Gang followed by the pregame. Cardinal baseball next on KMOX.